You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Welcome to CITR 101.9, the Indigenous Collective. This is Unceded Airwaves. I'm your host, Willow Thixon, and I have a special guest here with me today. His name is Caleb Bain. You may or may not recognize him from such places as the cover of The West Ender, or Fractured Land, the movie, or Being Rowdy and Ridiculous in Your Neighborhood. I'm sure he can introduce himself a little bit better than that.
Merci, Joe. My name's Caleb Bain. I'm Etchedene Dene and Dineza. I come from the Treaty 8 Territory in northeastern British Columbia. I acknowledge my presence in the Musqueam Territory and Musi Cho for yourself, to yourself and the collective for having me on the show.
Yeah, you're very welcome. It's nice to have you. We've had an episode before, a couple episodes about talking about Site C and the issues surrounding Site C. So I thought it'd be a nice follow-up to have you in here talking about the big issues on the plate. I'm Cree, Anishinaabe, and Métis, and coming from Alberta, seeing what's happening with Notley signing on to Enbridge, even though my whole family voted for Notley in hopes that it would stop that pipeline. What do you have to say about the Christy Clark and Notley in bed together?
That's my first thing. So pasty. So last week, Rachel Notley formally reversed her position. A lot of people saw it coming on the Enbridge pipeline. They haven't formally signed on yet. Christy Clark has her five conditions, which in my view are a little bit hypocritical and disingenuous, because what's happening in Northeast BC, both in regards to LNG and that likely development and that association with Site C, has created a situation where the policy objectives of the BC government, the Clark government in particular, are directly aligned with destruction of the territory. And so to see Rachel Notley flipping her position and negotiating with Christy Clark — there's a Globe and Mail article 3 days ago that articulated some of the internal stuff. Trudeau and his entire cabinet are meeting in Kananaskis country right now until Tuesday to meet with Rachel Notley and her cabinet. And so what's going to happen, in my opinion, is Clark and Notley are going to figure out with Trudeau how to push a couple pipelines through, because Christy Clark needs to have some success before we start the 2017 electioneering. So she probably wants to get final investment decision on some pipelines by the end of the summer, and Notley needs a win because their economy is dying, and Trudeau needs to prove to, you know, the corporate extractive industry elite that they're not going to stop everything. As we see, you know, they signed on to Paris last week, the climate change accord. So it's a very interesting time, and my territory has a lot of issues: LNG, Site C, forestry, coal, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, we're the sacrifice zone, so it's nice to be able to talk about these issues down here in Coast Salish territories.
Yeah, absolutely. Didn't Christy Clark say something like Enbridge is going to stop the forest fires?
There was an assertion that LNG would stop forest fires, which how a highly explosive substance stops forest fires is beyond me. And actually, interestingly, a couple of days ago, Trudeau mentioned that we have no colonial baggage here in Canada. And it's interesting to look at, like, you know, these various kind of like sloganeering phrases cropping up, right? The forces of no, the forces of yes, and that kind of thing. And so, you know, like I say, we're in an interesting time, and the writing is on the wall, I think. And I think that, you know, for people here at UBC, for people involved in the struggle, it's a time to really pay attention to the foundations in the discourse and the dialogue in media and in the regulatory process that's starting to make a lot of this stuff look like it might actually happen.
Yeah, it's a pretty intense time. We're going to go directly into some music. So pretty intense music. Yeah. So we conjured up a little playlist. So half of these tracks are suggested by Caleb to help facilitate the dialogue. So first, do you want to introduce our first track?
The first track is from the Aztlan Underground. A lot of you who were in the movement, Indigenous Nation movement, you'll know this song. They did a lot of shows up on this side and are connected into kind of the West Coast decolonization crew from a long way back. And just a content warning as well. I am a feisty creature, and I care a lot, and I swear a lot. So this music reflects that reality. And so for those of you with sensitive ear holes, we're going to try and take it easy. But
all right, here we go.
Are you interested in Indigenous issues? Do you get ticked off with ongoing colonization? Do you have something to say? Or do you want to learn more? We have just the thing. Join UBC's first ever Indigenous Radio Collective at CITR Radio, Unceded Musqueam Territories. Our show, Unceded Airwaves, airs every Monday from 11 to 12, and we meet from 12 to 1 to plan our upcoming shows. We're interested in content covering various things from film to literature, current day politics, history, whatever you want to talk about, we're into it. Everyone welcome, Indigenous and non-Indigenous.
As a station, we believe in playing content with artistic and cultural merit, and sometimes that category includes material which can be construed as offensive. For those who have children nearby or are sensitive to provocative material, the following broadcast may have strong language, themes, or be otherwise objectionable. Please consider tuning out and revisiting CITR after this program.
A Spaniard prisoner given a chance to be free as a conquistador finds himself in the so-called New World without his Spaniard woman and among conquest subjects already perceived as subhuman. He picks and chooses an indigenous woman. He rapes her and has children. These children he does not care for as they are half-human. He beats a woman when she refuses his orders. He abuses the children when he wants to and when they get in his way. And now, 502 years later, the descendants of the ultimate dysfunctionalism, a blueprint for the colonized. Seven generations of cycle of illness, of people without heads, without an identity, without a direction, without an understanding, and without a connection. Torn from their mother and raped by their father, now lost in a sea of white, they begin to recover, recognize their identity and connection to these roots that run deep. Deep in the soul of our mother, 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 deep in the soul of our mother.
Recuerda, gringo, nuestras tierras nos has robado.
Welcome back to CITR 101.9 Unceded Airwaves, the Indigenous Collective. I am here with Kayla Bain. If you haven't heard me before, my name is Willow Thixon, and I am one of the collective members. If you'd like to get involved, please don't hesitate to email us or contact CITR, as you heard in that little PSA, little promo that we played. But I'm here with Kayla Bain. We were kind of, I want to say, making fun of the Notley and Clark
Christy
agreement.
Clark connection?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And what's happening in northeastern BC. I was going to ask Caleb what's happening on the ground because we all see what's happening in the news and we can talk about how that's affecting our families, which is I think happened when we were discussing Site C earlier with another collective member, Samantha Nock, who's also from that territory. Mm-hmm. But what's happening on the ground? Like, I know that's literally right in your territory.
Yeah. So just for the listeners out there, I've just resigned my position as the lands director for the West Mobley First Nation, which is one of the two First Nations fighting Site C in court. Interesting. And I'm also the executive director of the Keepers of the Water, an organization dedicated to protecting water from industrial development in the Arctic Basin, the largest water basin in the country. So on-the-ground realities in northeastern British Columbia, the decline in oil and gas prices has created a situation where all the people who were making money off of the oil and gas industry are now kind of hurting, and that supports Site C because it's going to produce a lot of jobs for the region. A lot of Indigenous people have this catch-22 situation in the Northeast, and we've had it for a long time because we've had 60 years of oil and gas development, but as we've experienced with the fur trade and with minerals and even with forestry, natural commodity fluctuations create boom and bust cycles, and it's always people of color, women, Indigenous people who suffer in the bust cycle, right? When things get lean, we get hurt. And so in the Northeast right now, there's a lot of pressure from a lot of angles to develop. Leadership is having a really hard time because after 10 years of Harper, all the structures to assess major projects have really been dismantled or reoriented or manipulated to facilitate a yes without actual meaningful analysis. And that's the basis of the court cases we're involved in now. That's the basis of the deep level of dissatisfaction. That's the basis of the protest camp that went up. And that's interesting, kind of the basis of what's happening all over Canada, quite frankly. You know, BC and my territory represents a major sacrifice zone, but it's by no means the only one. It's just one of the biggest. You know, the issues that I'm experiencing in my territory are the same as what's happening down here.
Yeah, so what's happening in your territory on the ground, right?
Back to the ground. Yeah. Okay, what's happening on the ground? 60 years of development have created a system of cumulative impacts that have diminished our ability to exercise and maintain our culture. So, for example, I was paying our Indigenous hunters to go after certain wolf packs that were predating heavily upon the last 17 breeding female caribou in the territory. We're competing more and more and more for jobs, but in particular for land and access to land. Things are getting pretty feisty. A lot of nations have decided that they will simultaneously pursue development, but oppose the development that's like kind of the most deadly for us, the most troubling for us, the most unacceptable for us.
So it's like the best of all cases, or...
I would say it's more like triage.
Yeah, like triage. We're gonna try and choose because we have to choose something.
Yeah.
And that's like, is there an epic divide within communities? Because yeah. I know there is sorts of other attitudes.
It's interesting you mention that. Like, I got back from Haida Gwaii yesterday. Actually, got given a warrior up shirt by the president of the Haida Nation. I was privileged to meet the hereditary leadership and the elders in both Skidiot and Masset. Touring the film, I'm the subject of Fractured Land, and I was in Blood Tribe. Week and a half ago, I was in Mohawk territory 3 weeks ago. I've been in Anishinaabe territory many times. What I've seen touring the Fractured Land film and engaging in this kind of work for the last 5 years or so in unconventional energy is this growing divide in communities. In the Northeast, you know, my family's deeply involved. My mom is involved. My dad refuses. A lot of my cousins and uncles in particular are really, really, you know, they're pipeliners, they're welders, they're people who are part of this industry, and that's their prerogative. But taken at a collective level, that stuff's unacceptable. So the on-the-ground reality is kind of this, like, this harsh existence where, like, you know, I see my cousin drive by an F-350 jacked up with, you know, a fat quad in the back. I know where he got that. and that bothers me, but that's fam and I love them, and that's, I think that's the truth. I mean, I assume your friend Samantha from the collective, she would probably echo that sentiment, as would most people in the Indigenous community and non, that on the ground up there, it's just the dynamics are a lot more amplified because there's so much more development, because we don't, you know, LNG isn't a theory for us. Site C isn't like an abstraction for us. Methylmercury, because of the W.C. Bennett Dam, isn't, you know, a theory. It's like, don't eat that fish because it will like make your kid look like Flipper. Like,
do you find that, you know, there's a lot of resistance within the city being like, no Site C, no dam. And then you go into the actual communities that are affecting it, and all of a sudden everybody's like, nope, just, I don't agree with Site C, but I really want the money and need to feed my family. Well, or do you find that, you know, it's easy to say the theory here in the city without the actual, like, people fighting on the land?
Okay, really hard question, because I'm no longer a member of the Bar Society. I'm no longer, you know, technically a lawyer. I'm just a guy with a law degree, but I have certain obligations that I can and cannot speak to. What we're seeing in the Northeast, and again, you're seeing it all over the place, but especially in the Northeast, is this divide between people who say enough is enough, and others, you know, and necessity is the plea of the tyrant and the creed of the slave. And the necessity argument underpins the constant encroachment of resource extractive industries on Indigenous land perpetually. So necessity, it's going to happen anyways. Let's get our portion of the Site C construction contracts, right? And that mentality is having a slow creeping negative effect upon the communities. So my grandma, for example, who still does hides, 82 years old, really healthy for her age, but definitely, you know, 82. She's sad, and when I speak to her of the old times and the new, she doesn't cry, but you can tell that it breaks her heart to witness what she has. And if you're not from that territory, if you're an urban Indigenous person, an urban person who hasn't spent time on the land, doesn't have the privilege of elders who you know well, you don't know that pain, I think, in the same way. And I would really encourage listeners to go up and check out what's happening. You know, take a road trip, take a couple of days, this beautiful country, and go see. Because once you see, all of these theories and abstractions become tangible. And I think that will sort of facilitate and motivate the kind of sustained, sophisticated engagement that goes beyond clicking like or showing up once every 3 months down at the ledge or down at the art gallery. You know, this isn't about, that's all important and that should be honored and that's critical. But there are bigger issues that require sustained, sophisticated engagement. And, you know, being here at UBC, part of that engagement is academic, you know, and I know the First Nation Studies program does really good work, the program of water governance. There's a lot of groups, you know, and most of the academic institutions in Canada who are wary and engaged on these issues. But that, you know, like, that's not about election cycles. That's not about, like, click and like. That's about 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 years of research to, like, get a point down, and that's critical.
Yeah, well, was the Fractured Land movie kind of a segue to open up this discussion, or was it, like, almost an invite for people to be like, come fight this fight, come to my territory, which is always a sketchy thing to do with Indigenous people. The last time that happened.
Fractured Land was both. Fractured Land was designed as tactical media. It was designed to engage with the left versus right, you know, environmentalist versus business discourse, which is epically contrived BS that really divides us. And Fractured Land was about illustrating the deeply complex nature of these discussions out there, right? And I think the truth is people in the urban environment don't have the ability to engage that as easily, just because you don't see it. You're literally 1,000 kilometers away. So Fractured Land was about describing that, and it was an invitation because it describes and shows, illustrates the territory in a very tangible way. It was interesting. I was sitting with the hereditary leadership of Masset 2 days ago, and I was invited to talk with my friends from Leelu Island, who were engaging with them about the Leelu Island issue and the LNG issue. And so there was someone from the top end of the pipe and someone from the other end of the pipe talking to the Haida, whose position is largely related to both ethics and tankers. And this elderly, this matriarch, she looks at me and she says, you know, I can't imagine what would happen to me. And she started crying in this meeting of hereditary chiefs. And she started crying, saying, I can't imagine what it would be like if my food was contaminated. And I looked at her and I sat there for a minute. And I responded and said, you know, it's strange, but I just realized that I can't imagine not inspecting the liver, the lungs, the heart, the kidneys, and not smelling the intestines for hydrocarbons. Like, I can't imagine clean food. I can't imagine spaces where I don't wonder about the airborne deposition of contaminants from flares into water bodies. You know, those high mountain clear streams? Like, I can't imagine not worrying about that. And yet here's this matriarch.
And I can imagine the bioaccumulation of oil in the animals in Alberta.
Yeah, like, yeah. Well,
whether
precisely.
It be the elk or the deer or the moose. Mm-hmm. And I always think, I'm like, okay, well, there's so many unreported oil spills everywhere in Alberta. Mm-hmm. And I have a friend's mom who works for the oil and gas company, and she's like, oh yeah, we actually don't report it unless it's like over a bazillion, I don't know, it's some ridiculous amount, like number, and they don't have to. There's no obligation for them to report it, and it could they could leave it for 3 months. And I'm like, how is that bioaccumulation of oil going to happen? And so I can't imagine a space either where my food is clean. Part of the reason why I really love the West Coast. But now, you know, there's all these diesel spills. And you know, it's happening slowly over here too. And I think that maybe Haida Gwaii, what you're talking about, and Liliu Island, and that beautiful part of the Northwest Coast is potentially, how I see it, maybe the last stand for places, for things like Enbridge. Because on the Alberta side, it's all treaty territory. We're kind of, we don't have a lot of say.
Well, as someone with a law degree and has practiced Indigenous law, I would love to engage on that treaty discourse. But I concur, and actually I said that to them. We look to you because it's pure. We look to you because it's clean. We look to you because you built really good arguments. And the thing is, the kind of arguments being used and built up in that territory are being sold to Indigenous people in Northeast BC with the poison pill that says you have to accept LNG and you can have a degree of delegated authority to manage your lands. You can have some shared decision making, but guess what? You got to take a little bit of the LNG too. And the thing is that, you know, this is a global game. This is, you know, this is about much more than just continentally bounded oil and gas resources in Canada. This is bigger, and Indigenous people are right in the crux of that.
Indigenous people, women, it's always the crux.
Yeah, women in particular. Very true.
Especially with extractive industry.
True.
And that, we will come back to that.
Speaking of some badass sisters.
Yeah, we're going to play some Northern Cree featuring Santa Gold and MIA. It's a little Indigenous from around the world, plus some Northern Cree. And you know how I love the powwow. So this is called Get It Up. Check it out.
May I see your driver's license, please? May I see your driver's license, please? What's that in your cassette tape?
Always standing in the door. Radio click, radio click, radio click, radio click, radio click,
radio click,
radio click,
radio click, rebuy, rebuy, rebuy.
Oh, For over 30 years, there has been one voice in the local Vancouver art scene that has stood above the rest, and that's Discorder, that conspiracy, punk rock, foxcore, sassy, still publishing magazine from CITR. We're one of the established and trusted voices of Vancouver's music and arts culture in the Lower Mainland, with 8,000 copies distributed monthly to over 135 distribution locations, from the Lido to Zulu Records.
Discorder is one of a few magazines published by a community radio station, and we only serve up the freshest local and Canadian goods.
We have interviews with artists, album reviews, live show reviews, and articles about everything important to our crazy, unique, varied, and amazing culture in Vancouver and across the country.
Pick up your free copy of Discorder today, or sign up to have it delivered to your door wherever you are.
Check out our website for distribution locations and all the information about advertising and getting involved with Discorder.
Welcome back to CITR 101.9, Unceded Airwaves, the Indigenous Collective. I'd like to raise my hands in thanks to the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations for hosting us on their beautiful unceded territories. My name is Willow Thixon, and I am here with my co-host slash guest, Caleb Bain. And we were talking about extractive resources, and we kind of ended with extractive resources and extractive women, and how usually it's the people of color, the Indigenous people, and the women who get extracted along with the resources. So whether you're in any, you know, South America or Australia, where there's a mine, where there's oil, where there's gas, where there's diamonds, where there's wherever, that whatever that the larger collective of society and the corporate structures want, it's the people of color, the Indigenous people, and the women that usually get affected. And so I was kind of having this thought and idea of Fractured Land, the movie, and how in a way it extracted pieces of you because it wasn't you telling the story, and how that came about for you. Did you feel like you were getting extracted your resources?
I laugh because I don't want to cry.
So
I had 5 years of my life recorded essentially and condensed into 78 minutes. And those were very, very hard years. Years coming through law school while maintaining my connection to my territory and engaging on the fracking issue before it was cool, before it was public, before LNG was on the table. You know, and reflecting now, I didn't fully appreciate and understand what was being done. You know, as a man, as a masculinity, you know, I have profound obligations about my image and what I represent and how I represent it. That in the past, I didn't live up to those obligations, and I went through that journey publicly, and that was traumatizing in a major way. As was the lateral violence that came from the community here in Vancouver, the Indigenous decolonization community, while I was doing that. And so that trauma right there, combined with sort of just, you know, I have to live my shame. I got to live the violation of my territory. I got to live the story of my people once or twice a week. You know, I've been talking to between, you know, 500 and 1,000 people every 2 weeks for the last 2 years now. You know, I've had some major events. I've been, you know, I just came back from Hadigwai yesterday. And that privilege is amazing, but it comes with some costs, and personal, professional, financial, and that's okay. But as someone who's, you know, in the media, and as someone who's sort of known, and as this abstraction, this thing about me exists, I have felt at times violated and at many times essentialized. And I suspect that that's how a lot of us feel. And it's interesting that as we engage with the extractive industry, we unintentionally replicate those extractive dynamics. And that might not be fatal to the movement and the endeavor, but it sure as hell plays a role in the burnout rate for those of us engaged in the struggle.
Yeah, I was in one of my courses, which is an amazing course if you ever want to take it, Indigenous Plant Medicines and Medical Systems. We talk about the burnout that happens with Indigenous people within academia and Indigenous people within any important endeavor, because we're overused because there's not enough of us. So it's like you're expected to literally carry the weight on your shoulders. And when I watched Fractured Land back in whenever I did the screenings here in Van City in November? Was that November?
Ways by.
Anyways, in the fall, I was thinking about the weight of the world on your shoulders and how everybody is like almost expects you to do literally everything. And then you see that a little bit in the movie, but they kind of tell more of a personal narrative. Do you find that you are like people expect you to be the face, the vision, the future, the lawyer, the activist, the warrior, the like, I'm on the ground, I'm over here.
And well, Like, yeah, yes, people do, but that's, in many ways, that's a type of privilege. It just comes with some profound costs. One of the great common questions I get, I had this, you know, I had it in Alberta a couple weeks ago. I had it in Blood territory there near the border. I had it in Haida Gwaii last week or yesterday. God, the days blend together. Is what do we do? You know, how do we engage? And sometimes, you know, I'll say, like, it's not my job to dictate to you how you engage. All the listeners, everyone, you can hear the sound of my voice right now. Like, you have gifts. And it's not my job to dictate to you or suggest to you how best to use those gifts. However, for those of us, you know, who have profile and who are caught up kind of in the public side of this struggle, there is a lot of pressure, but that pressure, that comes with the territory. I think the failure is that we don't support leaders in the same way that we don't support the marginalized, in my experience.
Yeah, do you find that because you are such a figure of an, like, there's so many activists that are faces of movements that frequently get critiqued for not necessarily doing things? I know you actually do things within your community.
There's a lot of, well, as a lawyer especially, there's a lot of things I did that I could never disclose, right? Yes. Like, there's a lot going on behind the media and the movie and all that that I will never and can never disclose. And that's fine. That's the consequence of being a professional.
And do you think that sometimes the, like, there's a lot of movements, MMIW, the activists, the fracking, the beautiful photos that are being, like, Audrey Siegel, who we were trying to get on into this show in the future, who went literally in a boat to try and stop the oil rig that was on in the shores. And there's a beautiful photo. And do you find that that is an effective way to take stands, or when Maya Tailfeathers chained herself?
Yeah. Well, I met the women she was with when they got arrested, actually, a couple weeks ago. It was a real privilege. You know, Maya and the women from that community, the Blackfoot peeps, that was, you know, Blood Tribe was divided and intense. You know, my experience is that if we're going to use, and this is true of any social movement, if you use media and messaging to do so in an unethical way, creates kind of Terminator genes in the movement, because you just sow dissent. You sow that which is not, to speak in a more traditional way, a good way. It does not come in a good way. Fractured Land, we followed ceremony, we put tobacco down from the start. We were doing our best to honor people. We gifted people. Like, there's tons of gifts that were done out of my own pocket and others just for protocol reasons. And I think to the extent that we lived up to those obligations, the work was a success. But the thing about the work is it's one piece of a much larger puzzle, right? The media hustle, if you want to call it that, you know, engaging the courtroom of public opinion through this medium, through any medium, is just a piece of a much larger process of engagement. You know, to my knowledge, no one has developed as yet in Canada a cohesive strategy that combines action and activism with legal advocacy, with sustained academic analysis, with direct action, with an understanding of what the resurgence of Indigenous laws and legal orders look like, and then all of that combining with the creation of a viable energy alternative to the dominant, you know, patriarchal, extractivist, industrialized, hydrocarbon-intensive industry. No one's put together the pieces. So Fractured Land, even if that came in a good way, still had to fit and still has to fit with this larger engagement. And, you know, Naomi Klein's done good work in the LEAP manifesto, and seeing how the NDP are being pressured to adopt that, the discourse Notley's NDP right now in Alberta relative to the LEAP manifesto, like, that's very interesting. But that's even just, and that's, you know, it's very impressive work, but that's just the first step in something bigger, in my view, and which is why I know you're involved with Rematriate, and I think that Rematriate in particular represents another evolution, but this stuff has to maintain, because you're fighting the biggest corporations on the planet combined with the most pervasive and divisive socio-political and socio-economic ordering structure ever devised in the history of humankind, which is modern extractive industry.
See, and I've heard some critiques of LEAP Manifesto and being like, oh, it's a bunch of famous people saying some bunch of words and putting it on paper and hoping other people say some words. Yeah. And so I don't know, like, I don't get involved in social policy. That's not my area of expertise. Do you think that it can be more than just a bunch of famous people saying a bunch of words?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's, you notice, like, using famous people to make it sexy and to get some lead time, to get some National Post articles, to get some coverage in the Globe and Mail, because you realize those media messaging outlets are commodified and colonized. So I think what they were trying to do is they were trying to use that kind of like make it sexy, get some big names approach to then lead to something bigger. And the Leap Manifesto is a statement of principles, really does clearly understand that it's actually the development of the regulations, the practices, the camps, the alternatives, the, you know, the wind farms, the solar farms. It's those things that really matters. So nations like Souk, which have gone largely green, I think they represent the application of those principles, but I don't think it's on Naomi Klein and others to define for the collective how best to move, because it's so presumptuous. It's on the collective to step up and own the harsh reality that is this time and engage. And that's why I wouldn't dictate to your listeners how they should engage, because they're creative, wonderful beings, mostly, I assume.
You but, guys are amazing.
Yeah. We love you. But, you know, there's a bigger question about how, you know, is it your art? Is it Maya's art, or is it Maya getting, you know, chained up and arrested that mattered?
Yeah.
Is it, you know, is it your science, for example? I know that you're involved in the health sciences. Is it rematriate? Is it, you know, my homie Kel Salem's language revitalization? Like, all of that stuff works, but the problem is no one's put together a cohesive strategy. You know, I know Ryan McMahon and others have kind of alluded to it in the, I know there's the reconciliation event last week, she couldn't make it to, but I think that there are steps towards this. But, you know, the Idle No More movement and sort of what has come out of it, in my view, as someone with a technical background, with a legal background, and also like feet, you know, on the land, I'm not seeing a cohesive strategy. And the thing is, there is cohesive strategies, and they sound a lot like Rachel Notley reversing her position, and Christy Clark advocating for LNG, and Trudeau changing his messaging to suit saying yes to pipelines. Like, that's what we're up against, and that's a sophisticated structure.
Yeah, somehow we need to develop the alternative as sophisticated structure.
Yeah, well, and statements of principles are a good first step, much like, and that, I guess that'd be my one, like,
pro towards the Leap Manifesto.
That was a good step. I mean, you know, Glenn Coulthard, researcher here, his Red Skin, White Masks, Five Theses of Decolonization. Yeah. Excellent first step, but then it's up to all of us to translate that into something that applies, and I think that side hasn't happened.
Mm. We need the middle people to go between the extreme theory, academic, big concept to on the ground work.
The tangible.
Yeah. All right. We're going to get back to Caleb Bain in a little bit. We're going to play some Young Tribes. Shout out to Quentin and the boys. This is some Pacific new stuff. Listen to it. I've played them before. Little shout outs. Young Tribe. It's called Savages. I'm going to throw a little content warning here. It's a little bit depressive, also a little bit sweary, also a little bit real. Very, very real. Quentin drops it real. Young Tribes, Savages.
Юж нижнишка и странях, где хекалихи, кинчка и скангях, дашу бекаяси, акха и скангях, юниш ном, ох ях суки, кигмер, дашу бекаяси.
Have you heard the real story about the planet of the apes? It's twisted as fuck, I'm here to tell it straight. It happened here on Earth, and for what it's all worth, the men were shot dead and the women were raped. They dug up all graves, devoured rotten flesh. They were looking for gold, they were starving to death. They taught you this in school, so I know you know the rest. But here's what happened next in case it wasn't on your test. They kidnapped all people, raided all crops, befriended all chiefs before they were all shot. There, man, I'm just getting started. Here's a moment of silence to the dearly departed. Okay, Columbus, really nice to meet you. What you think about my people when you landed on the beaches? Hospitable, well-built, and of quick intelligence. And we're the savages, but that's irrelevant. You invaded
our land. Killed us in the millions. That was years ago, Indian. No hard feelings. Yo, all right, Chris. You just want us to forget. This remains unacknowledged. So please don't stress. Here's what I'm gonna do. I'ma put your ass on blast. Let these goomps was know what really happened in our past. Stuff we never learned while posted up in class. If you wanna know the truth, all you gotta do is ask. I'm sorry, mama, but I gotta bring it up. Cause what happened to your brother is seriously fucked. They took my grandma's baby and advantage over trust. And they touched him in places where we shouldn't have been touched. Now that's fucked up. They tried to murder our children. They couldn't take our men, so they took what turns into them. They really did a number, but they couldn't really finish them. The only good Indian is a dead fucking Indian. But we're still here, and we're still an inconvenience. After everything you gave us, we still ain't obedient. And that ain't right. You even let us have land. Man, you took all the soil and you left us with sand. And they found oil, so they took back the sand. They wanted on our ocean, from pipes through our land. You greedy motherfuckers, better not fuck that up too. And we're labeled as terrorists when we say fuck. Now let me back out, cause I ain't looking for trouble. When my blood starts to bubble, man, my mind will black out. Let me get my head straight and think of where I left off. Oh yeah, that's what pissed me off. Bring me back to the school where my uncle was brought. Where our words were forbidden and English was taught. Where whoopings were given till kids couldn't walk. For as little of a reason as the way that they talk. Where preachers were sinning, nuns were forgiven. No heaven for an Indian, doomed from the beginning. It just wasn't a place where you'd be proud to be indigenous. Don't ask my mama why she chooses not to be religious, man. Ha. Yo, now that's real shit.
Real shit.
When something's on my mind, I don't conceal it. It's to the broken souls and the lost ones. You were gone but not forgotten, fam. I'll meet you at the crossroad where spirits live and prosper. Happiness is offered to the ones who walk the land that the white man had conquered through the spread of a little disease called smallpox. Oh shit, you thought we forgot. Millions were killed, culture was lost. Petty gifts to make you sick, to make your fucking body rot. You could take your fucking blankets back, ours are plenty soft. And that's all I gotta say about the great Canadian Holocaust.
Infected 99% of
Welcome back to CITR 101.9 Unceded Airwaves, the Indigenous Collective. I'm Willow Thixon, and I'd like to raise my hands and thanks to the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh territories for hosting us on their beautiful unceded. I already said that. Unceded territories. All right. Well, it's the end of the show. I'm here with Caleb Bain. And I was going to ask him what his vision for the future was as a way to wrap up the show, because we've talked about a lot of different things on the ground, up in politics, all over. And do you have any suggestions or visions for the future?
Yeah. I think one, like taking stock of where we're at. You know, in my view, we live in a time where regulatory structures and analytical structures have low credibility. You know, bullshit's everywhere and our bullshit meter's getting pretty sophisticated. And that's recognizing government and law and science. A lot of adversarial relationships out there, an increasing politicization and militarization, particularly of energy infrastructure. So the use of Bill C-51 and disruption activities by CSIS, for example, very terrifying. Lots of litigation. The science is being contested. Fracking in particular illustrates that issue. I think childhood toxicity and maternal toxicity relative to fracking is an area that I'm going to get involved in shortly, and that's a critical juncture between science and law and Indigenous people that has to be explored. All the baselines have shifted thanks to cumulative impacts, last 100 years of development. And then I think that we have a situation where there's probably subclinical epidemics for neurotoxicity in Indigenous communities writ large. So what you got to do is figure out how to engage with a diffuse and multiscalar network of actors who are causing these dynamics to occur. And I think it requires multi-generational land occupation, recognition of the importance of institutional memory. So all those older brothers and sisters who are listening, Musi Cho, for your work, because you remember the struggle and the fight. Strategic engagement planning across jurisdictions and academic silos, so water research and health research. I know that plant research that you were in, that class that you were in, for example, that sounds like the kind of thing that would have a lot of potential. I think Indigenous data collection, critical issue, and I'm talking everything from your blood to your lands, everything. Getting the data in a safe, robust, and ethical way is critical so that we control knowledge in our territory. And then a rapid application of our good best practices to emerging jurisdictional actors like the Chilcotin, because they have title. They're the first place to ever have title. So if we were to apply the best science and the best regulatory way to build the best policies, I think that would serve a really good inspiration. In the short term, I think we got to amalgamate any really good existing research on these critical issues. You got to identify existing data and regulatory gaps. You got to support Indigenous land occupation. You have to carefully support legal advocacy because there's some bad precedents out there and some bad cases. And really expedite the deployment of new research and monitoring technologies for Indigenous communities and through academia. And so I have other theories about the medium and long term. I'd love to come back to the show and discuss them, but for now, just a real shout out to the academics and young academics coming up. You guys, you are the future if you apply your research in a good way. So, you know, as someone from the Sacrifice Zone, Treaty 8 country, please help us. Lend us your intelligence. Lend us your insight, because we need it.
All right. I'd like to send a big thank you, a little hi-hi miigwech, both to Caleb Bain for being a guest on the show. Sounds like that was a little segue into maybe having a Caleb Bain part two, or a Caleb Bain part two and three. Who knows? But I'd like to raise my hands and thanks, as we are on Musqueam territory, for hosting us. And we're going to end with a little Kinney Star. I believe Caleb and Kinney go way back.
We do.
And
there's a certain video of me. I think there might be a shower scene kicking around somewhere.
Oh my goodness. Keep it PG. All right. This is Kinney Star, who will save our waters. Thank you for listening. And tune in every Monday from 11 till 12. We will keep you posted. This will be downloadable as a podcast later today. So thank you so much.